Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Jeff Swartz, who is the founder of Ethic Advertising Agency, which was started in 2014. Today, we're going to be discussing Jeff's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no, thank you, Julie. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, so let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sounds good.
So what really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
There's a couple different things that really jump out for me in particular. I've always wanted to be in the ad field ever since I was in college. So I actually knew that I wanted to run my own agency when I was about 20 years old and spent better part of a decade kind of leading up to Ethic. And after launching it and growing it, the stuff that drives me is the people, it's the culture, it's being able to develop something in this industry that is very positive and very work-life balance and focus on our core values and creating an environment that supports a win-win situation for our clients, our internal staff, and our external partners and vendors as well too. So it's kind of just doing a more holistic, more efficient approach to the advertising world, as opposed to what I kind of grew up with within the industry of, hey, come in at 7 and stay till 10 p.m. and we're going to grind you to the bone and work you, you know, it's 80-hour weeks and those kind of things. So
yeah,
I love the culture side of things and being able to produce really good quality work that gets results while still being very understanding that, you know, advertising is not the most important thing in any of our people's lives. There's always going to be something else, whether it's family, whether it's their own businesses as their clients, whether it's, you know, hobbies, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then, so how did you originally get into digital marketing?
Yeah, my background's actually traditional. So I knew in college that I wanted to run my own ad agency, and that was the early 2000s. So it's still like running tapes to the TV stations, and terrestrial advertising was still really big. I remember Facebook coming to my university because he saw it had that .edu email as well too. So okay. I kind of got thrown into it a little bit because I was just young. And at that time it was like, hey, this internet thing, we're not sure exactly what to do with it. You're young. You kind of grew up with it. We don't understand anything with it. Why don't we throw you into it?
Yeah.
However, my path was really more on the traditional side of things with TV. So I worked at CBS Television in Dallas, and then I was a media buyer and planner at a shop down there, buying traditional and then also doing a little bit of digital kind of discovery there too. And then moved up to Pittsburgh and went back to CBS Television as well too. And then when I launched my agency, I had these media buying chops, knew that I wanted to get creative, which was my original background was more video and audio production. So I knew that one, I wanted that to be an element to say the right things to the right people. But then I started discovering digital was getting better results. As a business owner, my margins, as I did more in-house, as opposed to just buying it and getting it from other vendors, increased as well too. So it made a natural progression for my company to really dive into hyper-targeted digital advertising and creative services as our niche, as opposed to being what I was really originally trying to be branded as a full service ad agency that did everything. So that has really kind of been our focus over the last 5 years, five out of the almost 8 years that we've been around. And it's been awesome. The results that we're getting are fantastic, and it's been a really good, kind of wild journey because it's always changing. And I do firmly believe that it's the future, and that's why we put so much attention to it and focus on it.
Okay. So yeah, talk a little bit more about the niche that you serve and why you decided to focus on serving that space specifically.
Yeah, I did the traditional agency thing of trying to be all things to all people early on, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was like, hey, do you do this? Well, not really, but I can figure it out. Yeah. That's a trap. That's such a bad thing to get into unless you're at a scale. That you can have specialists in each of those fields, or you want to be a consultant that does really kind of spearhead all of those things. But if you're trying to grow a business, and if you're trying to have like, you know, a smaller business like mine, with only about 10 people in house, it's one of those things where a niche is beneficial, and you can either do the traditional niche of going into an industry, like just focusing on medical or B2B or whatever it might be.
Yep.
Or what I decided to do was focus on the services that we provide. So we got rid of a lot of our services and we hid some of our other ones. So there's still stuff that we do that we don't really promote or talk about or anything, but they become really useful because we can do those for our bigger clients. That means we get to retain them and have a little bit more of a holistic view of those things. But our brand and our niche is really in the hypertargeted digital space and the creative space. So saying the right thing to the right people at the right time. And that's kind of the area that we specifically focus on. The other component of it is we like to play with six-figure ad budgets. So, you know, we're not the right fit for somebody that only has maybe like $500 a month. We're also not the right fit for somebody that has $20 million as well too. So we're kind of in that in-between stage of like six and maybe seven-figure ad budgets or high five-figure ad budgets as well too, where it's enough to sink our teeth into to have that holistic full-service mentality, but focus it on just digital and creative. And the other thing that we did as well too is we brought it all in-house. We're not buying from somebody else. So we're running our own Facebook and our own Google AdWords and our own kind of elements. And we're also a trade desk on demand side platforms as well too. So we're running our own programmatic campaigns as well. We still buy from some third parties every once in a while, but I would say probably 85% to 90% of what we do is in-house.
Okay, very interesting. So, you know, when you were first starting out in those early days, what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome?
I mean, there's a lot. But I'm trying to think of the audience, what would be most valuable for this particular audience. Because in the early days, you worry about, I was 29 when I launched it. And you worry about, you know, are people going to take me seriously? And there was that component, like people wanted to wait and see if you actually survive year one and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because most agencies and most businesses in general don't. So there's kind of like the hump of being legitimate, the hump of knowing what you're doing and everything. But mm-hmm. I think the biggest challenge that took me a while to realize and that I would recommend being a focus from day one that a lot of people are like, oh, I'll figure out later, is scalability.
And how did you tackle that?
Yeah. So it's the thing that I've kind of narrowed everything down to when it comes to figuring out like the problems that I have as a small business and how I've grown. Because as soon as things started getting good, then I got too busy to focus on sales or focus on this or whatever it is. And it really became a company early on that was kind of like, I was the consultant. I had a couple people working for me, but it was really like me as the face. Mm-hmm. And finally, in 2019, end of 2018, I had enough. I was like, I can't scale my business like this. I am the bottleneck. I am the problem with it. I need to figure out how to become the company that I want to be and then work my way backwards. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of focus on scaling. Some of the things that I did is I have an org chart like a lot of people do. However, my org chart, like I mentioned, I have 10 people, but my org chart is 24 seats because that's the company that I want to build. And everybody talks about, oh, small company, we're going to have multiple hats that we wear. All right, well, this actually maps it out. This showcases Miranda is doing this hat and these positions. This is her primary and has it all kind of figured out. It allows me to figure out, well, where's our holes? Where do we need space and those kind of things? So that's been really useful. we also invested in technology that the big, you know, we are on the Advantage platform, which does our accounting, our project management, our time tracking, our media buying, media planning, all in one system, because we were in four different systems before. And I was like, this is stupid. What are all the big agencies in town kind of utilizing? And I discovered that, figured it out. It's a little bit more expensive than maybe cobbling something together, but it's going to allow us to scale. So instead of doing what was easy and what we needed right there, I was thinking, what would my 24-person company use and leverage and utilize and then adopt in it now? So I don't have to worry about it whenever we get to that side or along size or along the journey as well too. So yeah, figuring out how to scale and having that long-term vision and then figuring out those stops along the way is what allowed me to get over what I think is the biggest hurdle that any small business has, especially getting started out, of figuring out how to scale long-term.
That's really interesting. And then, so when it came to sales, what measures did you put in place so that you could be scaling the company and bringing in more sales?
So some of the things that we've done is I have a director of business development who handles sales. I've also increased my, like we call it account success team. So, out of the 10 people that we have three people that are full-time over there. Plus, you know, I'm still involved as the owner to build relationships and kind of get people into the funnel, as well. We're very big on thought leadership. So we write articles, we do, you know, podcasts like this and interviews and guest lectures and give back to nonprofits as like keynote speakers and nice. Those kind of things. So doing thought leadership, some organic type things. We do run some of our own ad campaigns for ourselves as well. We actually focus on our own branding. We'll take time to be like, okay, how do we make our website better? How do we improve our brand? We did a logo redevelopment or redesign and a brand redesign in the beginning of the pandemic. Because it was a good time to do it.
Totally.
And it was on the to-do list. And one of the things that we don't want to be is we don't want to be the plumber with leaky pipes at home. We want to treat ourselves like a client and make sure that we're doing some of the things for ourselves. So doing those things for ourselves that we do for other clients has been a big asset, but also having key people in place to have those conversations, build those relationships is really important. And then being a thought leader in the space as well.
Very interesting. Very good. So how do you guys really differentiate yourselves from other marketing agencies?
So we have our minimums. We have our brand, which is the hyper-targeted digital advertising and the creative that we stick to, and that's what we put out there. Yep. So we picked a niche and we stick with it. And then within there, we have our standard processes. We have a five-step process that we follow for all that we do. Within our day-to-day activities, we follow those processes as well. Or different processes, like, you know, if we're doing a graphic design project, that has one. If we're doing a media buy and media plan, that has another one as well too. As well as providing, I would say, very competitive pricing, especially in the programmatic space. So programmatic is one of the things that we're more known for, because not everybody can just be on a DSP. Not every, you know, most people, especially smaller ad agencies, are buying it from somebody else. Mm-hmm. So in that particular space where we've gotten a lot of traction, is because we don't price gouge people. I know vendors that will literally take the exact same programmatic platform and mark it up 400%. And we are not even near that, because our mission is to help our clients and allow them to get the best results and have longevity with them. We have a really good track record of longevity. And it opened up this really cool door of partnering with other ad agencies and with vendors as well too, because ad agencies can actually mark it up and still get a better price than if they went to, you know, a large digital vendor or TV station or radio station or whatever it might be that happens to have enough spend to be on these things. So that's a massive differentiator, is our programmatic prowess and our capabilities, to where we actually get a lot of business of people that just buy that from us, because we're a better price and provide a better service and we're extremely transparent compared to anybody else.
Interesting. So whenever you are quoting a prospective client, are there any, you know, techniques that you have implemented to kind of differentiate yourselves from other agencies and just kind of add more value just to make yourselves more unique? What does that process look like?
Yeah, I mean, we have we used Canva a lot for presentations, or we have Advantage that will kind of help build out quotes as well too. You know, there is the aspect of winning awards, as well that, you know, and having these accolades to kind of showcase that, hey, we've done this before, using testimonials too, saying, hey, we're you know, in this, we do that a lot now because we work in a lot of different spaces is, hey, you know, you are in a nonprofit space. Here are three nonprofits that we've worked with. Please feel free to contact them as well too. Nothing will sell any product or service better than a testimonial from somebody else, especially one that they trust.
Yeah.
As well. So we'll leverage that, and everything, but really we'll actually showcase, our back end. We'll showcase our reporting dashboard. We'll showcase how we actually move about within our DSP. We'll do a demo and be completely transparent as to, like, you know, what we have going on as well. So the combination of that transparency and showing how we operate and how we work, if somebody wants that, is really valuable. You know, one of the things that we will do for, like, larger projects, we'll say, great, you know, for us to do the discovery on this, it's $2,000 as well too. Cause it's not for us. It's not about trying to sell everything. I don't care about that. My goal was to get 8 new clients this year. That's it. I don't want more than that. But I want them to be at a certain dollar amount. I want them to have a certain culture and a certain professionalism of how they interact with us. So we're just as selective of who we partner with as they are to select us as well too. So during that process, a huge differentiator is us investigating into their business. Are they scalable? Can they grow? Are they positioned to be ready for what we do in order for us to maximize it? Because if they aren't, it's not going to be the greatest thing. And we'll actually say, hey, pump the brakes. You got a sales problem over here, or you have a website problem over here, or you know what? You're not ready to scale and everything. If we bring you a lot of leads, what's going to happen is you're going to reduce our budget because you can't handle it as well too, which happens, right? You know, and everything that we run into that too. So we try to be very, very picky, and it frustrates Scott, my business development manager, sometimes because we're looking for the right fit, and we'll often say, hey, we don't think we're the right fit, but what you really need is reviews. For example, we know Julia, go talk to Julia, whatever it might be. We'll actually refer out to a lot of places because for us, it's about identifying what that company needs in their next step. And if we're it, great, thumbs up. But if we're not, then we got to find who is the right next step, because then they'll be appreciative. And then maybe in 2 years, maybe in a year, maybe in 5 years, they'll come back around and be like, you know what? That was really awesome. I think we're ready for what you do. Cause we, with what I do with Ethic, we're so top of the funnel and mid funnel that there's a lot of things at the bottom of the funnel and mid funnel that need to be done to capitalize on what we do. And if it's not, then it's not gonna be as effective. And I wouldn't do that for my own business. So I wouldn't expect anybody else to do it for theirs either.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because quite often, you know, we talk about red flags, like what are the red flags in a potential client? But yeah, I feel like you're talking about all the green flags, you know, exactly what you're looking for that makes that ideal customer, that makes that ideal client. So, you know, you're looking for to know if they've got a solid sales cycle in place and that they've got a solid website. Are there any other things that you are that would be a green flag for an ideal client of yours?
Yeah, that they actually have a process of how to scale their business. You know, it could be the EOS system from Traction. It could be, you know, a number of different kind of things. A good green flag is that they have a coach, or they're a part of an entrepreneurship group, or that they themselves are doing some nice organic things. A good green flag is how they refer to their team and how their team structure is. Mm-hmm. If it's really chaotic and they, you know, they're kind of all over the place arguing, like, you know, like family businesses maybe is a good example of people that fall in that trap. You know, that's a couple of red flags to maybe kind of like, hey, you know, what's going on with that? And, you know, somebody's not going to have everything all green, all perfect and those kind of things. But it's a lot about saying like, hey, we noticed that X is off. We noticed that, here's a good example. I had a client early on that I had for like 5 years in the home improvement space, and, you know, smaller clients spending money with me and everything. And he's like, you know what? We're not getting enough leads. I want to increase our ad budget. And I knew what was the problem was, but I had actually recorded it and I tracked it as part of our advertising. And the problem was that he wasn't answering the phone. In the home improvement industry, huge. If you don't answer the phone the first time, there's a 70% chance that you are never going to hear from that person again.
Wow.
you're going to lose that sale.
Yeah.
So I recorded for one of the campaigns we were doing for 90 days. And then I listened through, this is early on when it was still like me and maybe like one or two other people. And I listened to it and I said, hey, you know, you could spend more money with me, but do you want to spend more money not to answer the phone? And then I showed them the report. And I said, over 50% of the time, you don't answer your phone. So if you just change some things internally, we do the exact same stuff and you answer the phone, you're going to be in better shape. It took forever for him to get that in the process. But when he did, and we spent the same amount of money, his sales increased 30%.
That's incredible. Yeah. It's,
that's but for so me, cool. with looking for those red and green flags, right? It's being able to say something like that and have be heard as well. So if it's a red flag, but I can kind of be outside opinion of shining light on that. And like, we don't do this, but hey, this is something that would definitely help what we do and help you as well too. It's how is that received? How is that internalized as well too? How is that partnership kind of built? So red flags are not necessarily a bad thing. It's all how, you know, are these people receptive to have that collaboration and are they looking for help to identify those things from everywhere? Cause that's what a good entrepreneur will do is like, how do I improve? I don't care where the inspiration comes from. It could be the 20-year-old intern that we have, or it could be somebody that's got 40 years of experience as well too. You know, it's about listening to everybody and then internalizing that and then figuring out, okay, cool, decision made because we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Let's move forward with it and see what happens. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then we'll call another audible, but you have to take action and do something.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're looking to see if they have that coachable aspect about them as well, that they're open to making those changes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good element as well too. The biggest asset for us has been our core values. So we have five core values and we're very upfront with them. We share what they are and we let people know, hey, if you make us not be in line with our core values, then it's not a right fit. So that's a very easy test for someone that we're looking at partnering with, where if they don't want to be aligned with any of them, which is respect, efficiency, quality, progress, and kind boldness, which really basically talks about kind of speaking without a filter, having it come from a good place and doing it to benefit the other person as well too. It's like the nice version of constructive criticism. But if those core values are hindered or we're asked to bend or break them in any way, that's not going to be a good fit for us. But it's also allows our clients to identify, oh, this is who these people are.
Yeah.
Because we hire by them, we would fire by them, we reward by them. You know, someone exemplates any of these core values. I've given $500 raises, I've given $10 gift cards and everything in between and stuff, just because I was like, hey, dude, you're doing a lot of great, you know, progression, or like you helped us reset this process and now it's super efficient. Or I really love the way that you presented kind boldness to that client, those kind of things. So having that in place written down and everybody knows it makes life so much easier, because decision making and showcasing to our clients who we are up front on paper can really hedge a lot of those issues that you might have later on.
Very interesting. Okay. So how do you really grow as a leader and help your team to grow professionally?
You do a lot. The biggest thing is if you're passionate for it. Entrepreneurship, leadership, and being driven by the right things, not greed. Money should not be driving you. If you're doing whatever you're doing as a leader for just pure money, you're not going to be happy and you should look for something else, in my opinion. But, you know, for me, what works is studying how to be a better leader, is listening to my team. With my team, my leadership team, I do one-on-ones that's strictly focused on them for 45 minutes once a month. And for everybody else, I do that every other month as well too. So I do one-on-ones to listen to them and we talk about, we have the same four standard questions for all of them that allows us to dive into how their workload is, what hurdles do they have. It also allows me to be in touch with, well, what's your career path like? What, you know, how are you doing those kind of things? So listening to them and then implementing change and walking the talk as well too. That's a good example. 3 years ago, we tried summer Fridays where we got out at 3:30 and never got rid of it because productivity didn't slip. So every Friday we're out at 3:30. Earlier this year, there's somebody that I met at a conference who works for Neil Patel, who wrote on her, and it'd be cool if she sees this. She wrote on her LinkedIn something along the lines of she had a fantasy, a work fantasy, where she had one day where she had no emails and no meetings kind of planned. She just got to get stuff done. And I was about to respond to her and say, yeah, that's like what entrepreneurs do. They take breaks and have scheduled times to do that. And I was like, but wait, why aren't we doing that as a culture and as a team at Ethic? So I did some research. Facebook, I think on Wednesdays, has no meeting Wednesdays and everything. So we implemented no meeting Mondays, where we don't have any internal meetings unless that's like the role of your job. So like business development based kind of things. You can have external meetings, but no internal meetings on Mondays. So you can focus on getting your week started really well. So it's about making changes, seeing how they are. And then if they're good and they're improving productivity, improving culture, improving people's lives and happiness and results for our clients, then we keep them. And if not, then we change them.
Yeah.
So we're always on the lookout to improve processes, but implementing stuff like that and showcasing it, showing gratitude to our people by rewarding them.
That's huge.
You know, having, you know, not treating them like adults as well too. And understanding that mistakes happen and mistakes are an investment in your people. You know, so there's a lot of those components, but it's really the mindset and the attitude of envisioning who you want to be as a leader, mm-hmm. and then figuring out how do I become that?
You know?
And studying it.
Yeah. I think gratitude, it's one of those things. It's so simple. And it's one of those things that just gets forgotten quite often. But when you feel appreciated, you're more likely to just be happier, to work harder, you'll be more loyal to the company you're working for. I think just having that gratitude towards your employees is so important.
Yeah. And the reality as an entrepreneur that has team members, you are not going to be the right fit for everybody. And that's fine. You have to figure out what kind of company do you want to be? What do you want to not negotiate on? And that should be really like those core values, your mission, kind of who you are, what the heart of the company is, right? And then find those people that match that. And if you find somebody that you bring on board that doesn't match that, that's okay. And it either means that they're in the wrong seat, so you maybe switch their seat, or they don't have the capability for that particular role, or they're just not the right fit for that culture as well too. So you can figure out maybe how to utilize them. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's okay if they leave and do something else, but it should be a really good thing if you're like, help them discover maybe what they don't like to do, or help them get their dream job as well too. I've only lost one full-time employee, and she's a Boomerang employee, and she came back, and she still works with us today.
Okay.
And everything. And she went to a company that I knew somebody else that was there, and I knew the culture of the company. I knew how they work, and it was very corporate and, you know, better pay, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, she's not going to like that. But I didn't tell her that. And there's no way that I could have done that, because she would always doubt, and then she'd be going to someplace else as well too. And I said, you know, I completely understand. I wish you nothing but the best. I'll support you however I want. Stayed in touch with her and everything. And then about 2.5 years rolled around, and then she came back, and she said, you know what? This feels like home. It feels like coming back. And then the only other employees that we lost were part-time employees. And I can safely say that they all left to work full time at a company at a position that I would categorize as either their dream jobs or like a better fit as well too. Wow. And everything. So that's one of the things where I'm actually very proud of the people that we have lost, of where they are today and who they are as well too, and everything. So, you know, I think that that's an important kind of take. It's just kind of the perspective and showing kind of gratitude of like what people kind of give you, but also realizing we're not going to be the best thing for everybody, but let's help leave them better and give them value, even if they go out into the world and do something else.
That's so awesome. I love that.
Thanks.
So where do you see Ethic Advertising Agency in 5 years' time?
So in 5 years, we're going to be at that 24-person level, if not beyond it. We are going to be taking some of the stuff we do and productizing it. So right now we have our minimums, but I actually am on a mission to try to figure out how to productize certain things to allow people with smaller budgets to get access to it, as well as focusing on having our kind of legacy clientele's annual budgets get increased as well too. So profitability will be on there from a team standpoint. I think our culture is pretty spot on. I would challenge it against any other ad agency in our market. But also, maintaining that and continuing to share in the success of the company. We have three different bonus structures. They are all tied to revenue. And when the company does good, they all get, everybody benefits from the part-time accounting person all the way to our full-time senior people as well too.
Okay.
So making sure that people are compensated both financially, but also like kind of fulfill them from like a time sensitivity and having them enjoy what they do as well too. But I would anticipate that in 5 years time we'll be, I would say 4x of what we did last year, at least with our current trajectory.
Amazing.
And at the staff size that is on my current org chart. But I'd actually kind of say that's probably more of my 4-year vision than my 5-year vision.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but is there anything else that you would like to add that you think would be beneficial to our listeners? So any agency owners who are listening?
Yeah. I mean, for any agency owner that's out there, one of the things that I found to be the most beneficial is just having conversations with other entrepreneurs across a whole bunch of different industries, but even within our own industry as well too. And I want to encourage agency owners to really think about the culture that we're in. I think that we've got a really nice shift with a lot of companies that are kind of going towards being more understanding the work-life balance through remote work, like the things that people are kind of looking for and everything. Mm-hmm. But we definitely come from a history of kind of beating ourselves up and on rates, on services, on grinding our people to the bones to satisfy these clients that are really kind of demanding. And I want to change that narrative a little bit amongst our industry to where it's like, no, let's stand firm on making sure that our team members can be at the little league games, that we're not working to the bone, that we do get good quality work from having happy individuals as well too, and valuing what we provide to people as well too. I want to be a catalyst for that shift that I think is happening. And I would just encourage any owner out there to have that kind of conversation with other agency and people in the advertising industry, but also internally, whether it's internally with yourself, with your spouse, with your team, whatever it might be, but take a break and actually look at how do we improve happiness legitimately without giving up profit, but by increasing efficiency and quality as well too. So I would not maybe give advice on that, but I would challenge the listenership to think about those things and try to go out there and figure out what works for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really interesting conversation, and more employees you see across the board are, that's what they're looking for in a job. They're looking for to have that flexibility so that they can be going to those little league games. And employers that are really going to care about them at the end of the day, and they won't tolerate working in environments where they're not valued. So it's an important topic to definitely be constantly educating yourself on and seeing what's working within your agency.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't sacrifice your profitability and your goals as a business owner and what you're doing to just be the funnest place to work and those kind of things as well. So you have to balance it. What's been the best thing for me, and maybe this is a good last thought, is I try to find people that I constantly have to say, don't email me at 6:00. No, you're not working on the weekend. Like, what are you doing? The culture supports that environment, but I have people that are so driven and like what they're doing that they have to be reminded to do that as opposed to flip-flopping. Instead of people being like, I wish that I had this and everything, but the culture is kind of driving me into the ground. You flip-flop that and find people that are driven and enjoy what they're doing and want to work a little bit more and put in that extra mile. But then the culture and like kind of your rules around that culture allow them to take that break, reset, go spend time with their families, their friends, whatever their hobby is, whatever they want to do. And then when they come back, I guarantee that you're going to get more out of their 7, 8, 9 hours of work, whatever they work in a day, than you would if you're trying to have them work 12-hour days.
Yeah, it's great advice. I love it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are now going to start with the Fast Five, which are 5 rapid fire questions for you. So What's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Ooh. I'm going to give 3 real quick. I'm rereading for the 3rd time, Built to Sell. I'm not going to remember all the authors as well too, but it's a fictional book actually about, scalability for an ad agency that can work with any industry as well too. I think it's really fascinating.
Okay.
I also really like Traction by Gino Wickman, which is about the EOS system.
Such a good one.
And then the 3rd one is what, we kind of have a book club going, and it's what all my team is reading too, but it's Contagious. I don't know about the author's name, but it's basically a collegiate scientific take and approach on why things catch on, why things kind of go viral, or why, you know, an ad kind of triggers a thought process as well too. So those are the 3 books that really made an impact on me.
That's really cool. Yeah, I definitely want to read Contagious. That sounds so interesting. Mm-hmm. And what does your morning routine look like?
So my morning consists of, I get up at 6:20. I stay in bed actually for a little bit. And I do this the night before, but then I find it's helpful for me to do it in the morning too. So at 6:20, I wake up, I go through my phone and I kind of go through, like LinkedIn, my emails really quickly, to just clear things out that I can do quickly. And my schedule for the day as well too. And then, get ready, get the kids ready, take them. Now that it's summer, my oldest is going to be in 1st grade next year. She was in kindergarten, but they're both going to preschool. So I take them to preschool and then I'm back and I start my work day at in between 7:30 and 7:45 normally. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there, I'm definitely a morning person. So I usually jam pack my mornings with, having it all scheduled out. So it's always going to be different, but I might have like thought leadership development, or, I know that I have to kind of like help out with a campaign that needs to be built, or I'm going to be, you know, doing something that should take some brain power, or like having a meeting that I want to be engaging for. Identify that in mornings, I'm more animated, engaged in the afternoons. So same. I'm like, let's capitalize on that and plan those in the morning as well. But that's kind of what my morning routines look like.
Awesome. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, but one that I want to give a shout out to is Jeff Nicholson. He is the CEO of Tracer, which is a VaynerMedia company. Hmm. I had the privilege of meeting with him, and over the years I've connected with him a couple of times and treat him like a mentor, and he's given me unbelievable advice that has really shaped my company in the times that we've met. But he's doing it, and it's funny because a lot of people know Gary Vaynerchuk. He has a completely different style. He's like a yin to the yang and of Gary for sure in a lot of ways. And I guess maybe not completely different, but he's just a down-to-earth, very intelligent, very smart, has a vision, knows what he's got going on and doing, and is very focused. So he's one that I keep up with and that I have a ton of respect for.
Okay, that's interesting. And what is your favorite online tool?
We're on the on Google, like G Suite or whatever, the workplace or whatever they call it nowadays. They always seem to change names. So I'm not really running campaigns at all anymore, myself and everything. So one of my favorite tools, I mean, really my 2 favorite tools are Advantage, which allows us to do a lot of different things and has really helped bring our technology kind of together for the media buying, accounting, and project management side of things. But honestly, like the G Suite stuff, I really love because we leverage the video chat, we leverage the text chat, the emails. We are on their cloud base. There are also, we leverage Google Sheets and Google Docs as well too.
Yeah.
It really is kind of a nice platform for us to kind of communicate with. And we leverage it, like a lot of people will leverage Slack and those kind of things as well too. So I actually, it's maybe lame, but that's been kind of my favorite tool for communicating with the team.
No, I love the G Suite as well. And you can always get so many plugins for it as well. So it's just like, it's super convenient. Everything's in one spot. So we use it as well with ReviewRobin and it's super helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I mean, there's a lot of things that I wish I had known, but if I would have known it, my path would have been different.
Mm-hmm. So it's beneficial for anyone, you know, just starting out to kind of learn from your mistakes or anything you think you would have done differently. So if you could give that advice to someone else.
Yeah. You just triggered something that is the one thing that I wish I would have learned because it took some lessons to get there, but it's something I teach my kids. It's something that I firmly believe in and that I have this conversation with every single one of my team members because inevitably I have to. And it is the fact that mistakes are a good thing.
Yes.
Mistakes are an investment in your education that is better than anything you can do. The pro from being an employee at an ad agency is not necessarily your investment that's being made. The con as an owner of an agency is it is your cost and your investment for that person to learn. And it's okay for them to do that. It's not okay if they keep on making the same mistakes. That's a problem. But an initial mistake is actually a really good thing. And how I ask people to think about this is think about in your career, some of the greatest lessons you have ever learned. And they're normally, I would say 90 some odd percent of the time tied to a mistake that you had done. Mm-hmm. And it resonates with you and it sticks with you, especially if there's the dollar amount attached to it. Mm-hmm. If you can actually say, like when I was at CBS and I was like 24 years old, I made a mistake that cost $10,000. It was a $10,000 mistake that was just a keystroke error and everything. So I will always remember that, but I'll also always remember how that account executive that I lost his commission on for acted. And he was upset, like you could tell internally, but he never really truly showed that. And he let me know that it was okay, that he's been there, that it was good. And I took that lesson and I was like, that was amazing. Like, I mean, if it was me at that time, I would have been so upset. And he was just like, it is what it is. It's all part of it. We'll figure out how to make it work and make it right to the client. That's the most important thing and stuff and go from there.
Yeah.
Even though I could tell inside, he's like, oh, man, that was like $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever the commission was for him and everything. And I felt terrible and stuff, but he handled it so gracefully. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. James Perez actually was his name. So I would say mistakes are a really good thing. And if I was younger, learning that and really having that resonate and believe in that, if that took hold early on, that would have been a great thing to have. And they're just investments in you.
Yeah. I love how you word that. Mistakes are investment in your education.
And, yeah. They're the greatest investment in your education.
Absolutely.
You can't go to you'll go to college, you spend money, you won't get as much education as if you go to a workplace, make a mistake, and then you will never do that mistake again. And you'll learn from it and figure out how to be better and how to not do that or do it better than somebody else as well too. It's the greatest investment into your education and your career is putting yourself out there to make mistakes and then learning from them. It's a terrible investment if you don't learn from it and you keep on repeating it because today you will lose your job. Or as an agency owner, you will lose your business as well too. So it's all about how you approach them and treat them.
Yes, 100%. I agree. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff. It was a pleasure to have you on the show and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me as well, Julie. I really appreciate being asked to be on the show and your time today.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.